this evening, we're going to, it's the 25th of the, no, it's the 10th, 25th of the lunar month. Yeah, it's the we already had full moon. Yeah, so it's the 25th of the lunar month. So traditionally, we do special practices on the 10th and the 25th. And so we're going to do this practice called Lama Chöpa this evening. And Venerable Tenzin will explain that to you during the discussion group time today. And then also tomorrow, for the people who wish, we'll be taking the eight Mahayana precepts. And this is a very wonderful practice that is, you know, quite special, because you have an experience of one day really keeping very, very good, very pure ethical conduct, because you take these precepts only for the duration of one day. So it's a very good experimental time to see what it's like. So Venerable Tenzin will also explain that during the discussion time. So we'll start at the, we'll take the precepts at 6 o'clock, your regular time that your morning practice starts. But since there won't be breakfast, because we just have one meal a day when we take the precepts, then your morning practice will go a little bit later, so you don't need so much time to eat. Okay. If people are, you know, feel that there's some difficulty with their health or whatever and they don't want to do this, then that's fine. She'll do a count and let the kitchen know. But otherwise, it's quite a wonderful practice to be able to do. And the first time you do it, you take it from somebody. So I'll come down and do the session with you at 6 o'clock. And then after that, you can take the precepts at home when you choose to on different days in front of an image of the Buddha. And so it's a nice practice to be able to do on a daily, you know, whenever you feel like you need a little bit of extra energy or you want to get yourself back on track in your practice, it's a nice thing to do on that day. And it, you know, so having the transmission tomorrow will give you the ability to do that. The eight precepts aren't too difficult. I'll just list them, but she'll do the explanation. So for the 24 hours, not killing, not stealing, no sexual contact, not lying, no intoxicants, and then not sitting on high seats or expensive seats or beds. But if you're on the bunk bed, it's okay as long as you're not arrogant about it. and then no perfumes, ornaments, jewelry of any sort, or, you know, scents, cosmetics. Deodorant is okay. and then the last one is we just have one meal for the day. You know, it's a vegetarian meal, which we're eating here anyway, so. Yeah.
So when you do it at home, are you not supposed to sleep on your bed? Because my bed is really expensive.
Oh.
So what do I do? Do I sleep on the floor?
Well, it depends how you look at your bed. If when you lie down on it and you're thinking, oh, this is a really expensive bed, you know, and I'm kind of a little bit higher than everybody else because I get to sleep on this really expensive bed. If you're thinking like that, then it's better to sleep somewhere else. Yeah. I mean, the idea behind this one is if it makes us arrogant and makes us consider ourselves higher than others, more special. Okay. So those were the two things I wanted to mention. And then this morning, I'll continue talking about the Vajrasattva sadhana. Hopefully, we'll get a little further along. And then in the afternoon teaching, I'll continue with the Shantideva section on the Four Opponent Powers. Okay? Because these two things are going hand in hand. So let's do the take refuge and generate our motivation. Do the mantra a few times. Have some silent meditation. So with the silent meditation, there's a number of things you can do. If you want to do the breathing meditation, that's fine. If you want to recite the mantra, that's fine. If you want to do some more what we call analytic or reflective meditation on the teachings that I gave yesterday, you know, where you're thinking about the teachings that you heard and applying it to your life, then you can also do that during the silent meditation time. It's kind of up to you. At least during this silent meditation, the one we have in the next session, right before lunch, that please do the practice. Lead yourself through the practice. Okay, the Vajrasattva practice. So we visualize the Buddha in front of us, surrounded by all the bodhisattvas, made of light, and they're looking at us with happiness and acceptance. And we're surrounded by all sentient beings. Mother on our left, father on our right. All the people we don't like in front of us. All the people we have issues with in front of us. So we can't ignore them. But we're all facing the Buddha together, seeking spiritual guidance. And so when we take refuge and generate bodhicitta, we imagine we're leading all the sentient beings in cultivating those attitudes. At all times, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, in all three vehicles, in the dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes, heroines, and powerful goddesses, in the great beings, the bodhisattvas, and above all times, I take refuge in my spiritual master. To benefit all sentient beings, I will become Vajrasattva and lead all sentient beings to Vajrasattva's supreme state. At all times, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, in all three vehicles, in the dakinis of the secret mantra yoga, in the heroes, heroines, and powerful goddesses, in the great beings, the bodhisattvas, and above all, at all times, I take refuge in my spiritual master. To benefit all sentient beings, I will become Vajrasattva and lead all sentient beings to Vajrasattva's supreme state. At all times, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, in all three vehicles, in the dakinis of the secret mantra yoga, in the heroes, heroines, and powerful goddesses, in the great beings, the bodhisattvas, and above all, at all times, I take refuge in my spiritual master. To benefit all sentient beings, I will become Vajrasattva and lead all sentient beings to Vajrasattva's supreme state. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Janapatita Dita Mebhava Sutakaya Mebhava Supakaya Mebhava Anuratta Mebhava Sarva Siddhi Mampayata Sarva Karma Sutsame Sitam Shriyankuruhung Ha Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tathagata Vajramami Mutsa Vajrabhava Ma Samaya Sattva Hum Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Janapatita Dita Mebhava Sutakaya Mebhava Supakaya mebawa, anaratu mebawa, sarva siddhi mambayasa, sarva karma sutame, sitam shriyankarang, ha, o bhagavan, sarva tatakata vajramami mutsa vajrabhava ma samaya sattva om pe. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dinapatita Dita Mebhava Sutakaya Mebhava Supakaya Mebhava Anuratta Mebhava Sarva Siddhi Mambayatsa Sarva Karma Sutame Sitam Shriyankarang Ha Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tathagata Vajramami Mutsa Vajrabhava Ma Samaya Sattva Ahum Pe. So let's recall our motivation before we actually start the teachings this morning, and think that we're listening so that we can improve ourselves, practice the path gain realizations, and to do that so we can be of greater benefit to all living beings. Okay, it's very important to really have the correct motivation for our spiritual practice. Because if we don't, then there's great danger that our spiritual practice becomes another feel-good thing that we do for a hobby. Because there's many ways, you know, in our society to approach the Buddha Dharma, and scientists are getting quite interested in it, and psychologists, and people are, you know, adapting different Buddhist techniques for different things. And this is all very good, and it's beneficial for people. But we shouldn't think that this is all that the Buddha Dharma is. Okay? Because using the Dharma to help us with this life's problems, like I said, it's very, very good. I mean, as much as we can stop suffering, we should. But the ultimate purpose of learning the teachings isn't simply to solve this life's problems. Because this life's problems come, go, go very, very quickly. When we're having them, they seem like they're in concrete and permanent and unchanging and so on and so forth. But if we really look at it, isn't everything in this life kind of going by very quickly? And when you think about the problems that you had 5 years ago, aren't they gone now? More or less? Yeah. Even our problem from last Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday, can you even remember what your problem was a week ago last Tuesday? Some of you can. You hold on very well. Some of us, you know, a week ago last Tuesday, what was aggravating us, you know, we can't even remember. Okay? So, you know, just to practice solely so that we feel better, I don't think is taking full advantage of what the Buddha Dharma has to offer us. Because it's the same reason why we eat, you know. I eat so that I can feel better. We eat also so we can stay alive, you know. But I practice Dharma so I can feel better now. You know, kind of. I go out to the movies so I can feel better now. So we want somehow our practice, the motivation for our spiritual practice, to be something special, something bigger than what our usual motivation is. Because what we're trying to do is uplift our motivation for our spiritual practice and then make the rest of our life part of our spiritual practice so that that uplifted motivation then gets spread into the rest of our life. Okay, so we shouldn't do it the other way, where our ordinary motivation of I want what I want when I want it gets spread into the Dharma. That's not the way to do it. Because then the Dharma becomes like the rest of our life and it ceases to be spiritual practice. So the key thing, you know, in our practice is the transformation of our motivation. Okay, are you getting what I'm saying? Yeah? And if we look at our own life experience, isn't our motivation what weighs us down so much in life? You know, if we're going to stop blaming other people for our problems, and we're going to stop blaming ourselves for our problems, if we just look on a day-to-day basis, what weighs us down? You know? Well, so much of it is we just have this poor quality view about ourselves, about life and everything, and we think, you know, purpose of my life is to get what I want when I want it. And then we go through life seeing things through that filter, assessing everything in our life in terms of, is this going to make me happy or is this going to make me miserable? It's what we were talking about yesterday, the whole filter for our entire life. And has that filter, that motivation of making myself happy and protecting myself from all insult and injury, has that motivation uplifted us and made us feel like we have meaning and purpose in our lives? Has that motivation gotten us in touch with our inner human beauty and inner human goodness? Or has that motivation of, you know, I'm poor quality me and I'm just going to get my immediate pleasure, has that motivation been what's kept us so stuck in our life? So stuck, you know, incredible potential, incredible talent. And we just sit there like, I want peanut butter. Yeah, I want chocolate. I want sex. I want music. I want a cigarette. Because that's all our life is worth. You know? And you get those things and they come and they go, don't they? How long do they last? And then at the end, we're left with, well, I guess got to have another one. Yeah? So do you see how this motivation, just for the pleasure of this life, it makes us so heavy. There's no inspiration in our life because we're just doing everything for me and my pleasure. Yeah. So if we start doing our spiritual practice for me and my pleasure, then, you know, are we really using, is it becoming spiritual practice? Okay. So this is where, you know, looking at our motivation is so crucial, and pulling ourselves out of this self-centered mind that's just thinking about my pleasure now. So I'm not saying thinking about my pleasure now is bad. Okay? And I'm specifying this because people, I find all the time after Dharma teachings, people will come up and say, you said that getting angry is bad. I said, I did? Listen to the tape again. Yeah. Somebody will come, you said having our own pleasure is bad. Please listen to the tape. I don't remember saying that. Okay. But we hear things according to our old conditioning. So I'm not saying anger is bad. I'm not saying pleasure is bad. Immediate pleasure is bad. I'm saying check your own experience and see where your joy comes from in your life. Check your own experience and see what uplifts you and what makes you feel stuck. Yeah. And if you check your own experience, then things get a little bit clearer. Yeah. Because we see that just working for our own benefit for this lifetime doesn't bring a lot of inspiration, you know, because we're stuck in me, and especially our culture. I mean, we have this innate grasping at me, but our culture just encourages it more and more. Okay? Whereas when we change our attitude and we start saying that other living beings are just like us, wanting happiness, not wanting suffering, that other living beings have feelings. You know, this is a new thing for some of us. Other living beings have feelings. They aren't just things that we rush by on our way to get somewhere. They aren't just obstacles to us getting to the front of the queue and accomplishing what we want to accomplish. Yeah. They aren't just other people clogging the highway, getting in the way of us going where we want to go. These are living beings with feelings, just like us. And so we believe in democracy in this country. There's one of me, and there's seven billion human beings approximately on the planet. So there's one of me, there's 6,999,999,999 others. But when I weigh me versus all the other human beings on this planet in terms of whose happiness is most important, who wins? Me! Me! One person! One person! Yeah? I'm much more worthwhile than all those other ones. But we believe in democracy. If we really believe in democracy, there's one of me wanting to get my way, and there's all these, this is the 7 billion minus one, who also want happiness. Whose happiness is most important if we're really democratic? Our own or the happiness of all others? Yeah. So do you see how limited the self-centered mind is? You know, how limited it is. It makes this big deal out of one person. Okay. Now, our self-centered mind is going to take that and misconstrue it and say, you're telling me I'm worthless and I'm valuable, that other people are more important, and I'm just one and I don't count. And I've been hearing that from my family since beginningless time. And I believe that I'm worthless anyway, and you're feeding it. No, I'm not saying that. Check the recording. Okay. I'm saying operating under the influence of our self-centered mind brings us down and is a great waste of potential. But we are very important in the sense that we have the potential to become fully enlightened Buddhas. That's something very important. That's something very precious. And to boot, not only do we have that potential, but we have a precious human life, which is an excellent opportunity to actualize that potential. Okay? So our life right now is extremely important in terms of spiritual practice, in terms of Dharma practice and what we can do. That is very important. Whether I get my chocolate cake or not is not so important. I spend all day chasing my chocolate cake. But whether I really get it or not is not so important. And some days I wake up and I realize that rather than spending all day long chasing my chocolate cake, I could use that time and energy on my spiritual practice instead. Okay? Lama always used the example of chocolate. He read us well. He read me well. But we all have our own version of chocolate. Okay? It could be music. It could be sex. It could be money. It could be status. It could be a relationship. It could be, you know, fame. It could be power. It could be being right. There's so many different things. We each have our own version of chocolate. Okay. So seeing the disadvantages of the self-centered mind, yeah, and then thinking of how do we feel when we put our life's energy in the service of others. Yeah. When you think of the situations in your life when you felt very fulfilled, I'm not talking about when you've had the greatest, highest pleasure. I'm not talking about that. But the times when you've had more inner satisfaction, more inner peace, yeah, more of a feeling that your life is meaningful, the fulfillment that comes from living a meaningful life, If you look at your life when you've had those kind of experiences or those feelings, what were you engaged in doing? What is it that really brings you that sense of fulfillment? Yeah. Think for a minute. What is it? Now, is it chocolate cake? It's not, is it? It's not chocolate cake. Does it have something to do with how you relate to other living beings? Yeah. Usually has something to do with how we relate to other living beings. That we have something to give to other living beings. Yeah. So we can begin to see that when we open our heart towards others with real care and concern, with real love and compassion, that enriches our own life. So cherishing others actually makes us feel much more fulfilled in the long term than seeking our own pleasure. Okay? Now, when I'm talking about cherishing others, I'm not talking about being a people pleaser. I'm not talking about, you know, whatever you say, I'm your slave. I'm not talking about doing what other people want us to do, because sometimes what other people want us to do is dumb, and we should not do it. Okay. So working for the long-term welfare for others, because we have genuine care and concern for them, is very different than trying to be a people pleaser so that other people will like us. Those are two very, very different things. Okay? Because a lot of our nice things we do towards people now are often with the motivation so that they'll like me, or at least so they won't dislike me. But that's looking for more chocolate cake, isn't it? That's done out of our own attachment to ourself. I'm being nice to you, not so much because I care about you, but because I want you to like me because I care about me. Okay? Whereas when we really care about others, there's more of a sense of, you know, giving to you is the delight and the fulfillment and the joy in itself. Yeah. Whether you like me in return is none of my business. Whether you accept what I give you doesn't matter. The important thing for me is to open my heart and give. Okay? And so the more we can get into that kind of motivation of cherishing others for the sake of cherishing them, because cherishing others brings others happiness and it brings us happiness. Okay. And by cherishing others, I'm not just referring to cherishing the people we're attached to. That's easy. Yeah. Even animals cherish the people they're attached to. Huh? Cherishing all living beings, that's the challenge. That's something animals can't do. If you have a dog and you feed your dog and you pet your dog loves you. Yeah? If something dangerous comes in, your dog barks. Yeah? Helping your friends, harming your enemies. Yeah, that's what your dog does, isn't it? Yeah, if I'm a dog, you know, somebody feeds me, they're my friend. Somebody strange comes in, they're my enemy. Yeah, help my friend, harm my enemy. Everybody who lets me lie when I'm sleeping is a stranger. I don't care about him. Okay, so that kind of attitude, when we relate to other beings that way, completely like animals, no special human quality. to helping our friends and harming our enemies. Yeah. I think the special human quality comes when we can begin to break down those divisions between friend, enemy, and stranger. When we can break down the divisions between myself and others. Yeah. So that our love and compassion can go out to everybody, regardless of whether they like us or not, regardless of whether they agree with what we're doing or not. Okay. So this is a tall order, isn't it? This is quite different. I don't know about you, but this is quite different than my usual way of thinking. You know, I'm still stuck like the dog. Yeah, help my friends, harm my enemy. Wag my tail if you give me some chocolate cake, bark at you if you criticize me. Yeah. But so really opening our hearts to everybody is, that requires a lot of deep inner work. Yeah. But this is something that as human beings we can do. If we put our energy into it, we can do this. We can accomplish this. Okay. It's difficult when you're born as a dog to do that. Yeah. Dogs don't have so much intelligence. I try to teach my cats to keep the first precept. I've been teaching them for a long time. They don't listen. So I have to keep them inside. And then whenever they come near a bug, I have to rescue the bugs. Yeah. So just that one precept, you know, the animals get very difficult to keep. Yeah. But as human beings, we have this potential really to, you know, to smooth out these differences. So that the great bodhisattvas, when they help others, it's the same thing as helping themselves. And His Holiness says, even if you want to work for your own benefit, the best way to work for your own benefit on a practical level is to cherish others. Okay? Why? Because if we only work for our own benefit, then we're going to live with a lot of people who are unhappy, because we're going to trample them to get what we want, or we're going to ignore their needs and concerns. So we're going to live with other people who are unhappy. Are we happy when we're surrounded by other people who are miserable? Difficult. Okay. So he says, even if you care about your own happiness, the best way to do that is to cherish others. Because if you do things to bring happiness to others, you're going to live with happy people. And that makes your own life much nicer. So you can see, starting just in a small way, you start even with your family. Yeah. Sometimes we get so mad at the people we're closest to, or we take them so much for granted that we treat them in a way we would never treat strangers. Yeah. We ignore them. We dump on them. We're in a crabby mood and they didn't do anything, and we dump our crabby mood all over them. Yeah. And then we expect them to love us. Yeah. And then when they don't love us, we berate them even more, and we yell and scream, or we slam the door and go in our room and pout and cry, thinking that that's going to make them love us more. Does it work? Doesn't work. You know what I used to do? Less now. I don't do it so much now. But I would be unhappy, and I would just be in this foul mood, clam up, exude negative energy, sulk. And in my mind, I'm thinking, my dear friends, the people I'm closest to, they should realize that I'm unhappy. And they should do everything they can to make me happy. And they should come to me and say, oh, dear children, you're unhappy. What's wrong? And then I could tell them everything that's wrong, and then they'd fix the whole thing. Okay, this is what's going on in my mind in the middle of my, you know. Then even somebody comes to me and says, oh, dear children, what's wrong? You look unhappy. I'm not unhappy. You know. Then even they try and be nice. I don't want it. You know. So the strategy that we often use, yeah, to get people to do what we want them to do, so that we'll be happy, does it work? At least my strategy doesn't work. Does your strategy work? Yeah. When you get angry at the people you love and yell and scream and throw things, do they love you even more? When you march out of the house and slam the door and don't come back for a while, do they love you more? When you go in your room and pout and cry, do they love you more? We just make it harder for them to love us, don't we? Yeah. And yet at that time, what we want most is to connect to the other person. Isn't it? What we're really wanting at that time is to connect to the other person. Everything we're doing is pushing the other person away from us. Pretty dumb, isn't it? Pretty dumb. Okay? And you can see how that whole thing is all about self-centered thought, isn't it? That whole mechanism in our life is all about self-centered thought. Because what's motivating the whole thing? Me, 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 me. Yeah. And then we wonder why we have problems with other people. Why we have relationship problems. You know, it's like, duh. Look at how I'm thinking. Look at what my motivation is. Look at how I'm acting. Yeah. Whereas if we really open our hearts and care about others as living, you know, living beings with feelings, yeah, then even if we're upset, we'll try and communicate with them. We'll try and figure out what we're feeling and what we're needing and communicate with them. We'll try and listen to what they're saying so we can figure out what they're feeling and what they're needing, because we actually care about them. Okay? So we can see just even on the level of our personal relationships that the self-centered mind makes us more miserable. Whereas when we genuinely care about others, it makes the flow of energy and the communication go much better, doesn't it? You know, because we're not blocking them away and making it difficult for them. On a social level, on a national level, it's the same thing. Yeah. What is the U.S. national policy? Or the philosophy between the U.S. national policy? We will bomb you until you agree that you're going to do it our way. Isn't that our national policy? We will bomb you until you love us. Is bombing other people going to make them love us as a country? No. But it's the same strategy we use in our personal relationships, isn't it? Yeah. And it doesn't work. And it happens in our workplace, too. We have a problem with somebody. I'm going to make you so miserable until you decide to do things my way. Does it work? No. Yeah. Living with miserable people does not bring us happiness. Yeah. Whereas when we, you know, can really open our hearts and care then there's a chance for some happiness. And when we don't have, when we let go of the strings that we have attached to other people, and like I said, make the giving the delight in itself, no matter how they react, then we feel really fulfilled. And sometimes the expression of our care and concern for somebody is saying no and doing what they don't want. But that's because we know it's for their long-term good. So here's really how cherishing others doesn't equal people-pleasing. Okay? If you have a dear friend or a relative who has a substance abuse problem, and they come to you for money that you know they're going to spend on drugs and alcohol, are you being kind by giving them money? Is that kindness? Is that compassion? No, that's not kindness and compassion. Is getting them into a treatment program, even though they're insisting that nothing is wrong, helping them? Yes. So they may be plenty mad at you, but you care so much about them in the long term that you're willing to endure their anger because you know in the long term that something is going to be more beneficial for them. I mean, this is part of parenthood, isn't it? How many of you have kids? Yeah, number of you have kids. So you know if you have kids, if you give your kid everything they want, are you helping your child? Are you helping your child by giving them everything they want? Forget it. You know? You're going to have a child who doesn't know how to fit in society, who won't be able to have a relationship with anybody because they're so used to getting what they want all the time. You know, if you're a parent, you know that sometimes the kindest thing you can do for your kid is teaching them how to deal with the frustration of not getting what they want. Yeah. Of saying no, explaining why, and then teaching them how to deal with the frustration of not getting what they want. Of course, that means modeling it yourself, which parents are not always so good at doing. But that's, you know, the real challenge if you care about your kids is to model that yourself, which means changing yourself. Okay? But, you know as a parent that sometimes you have to risk your child being furious because you're trying to teach them how to live in the world where they can't get everything they want. Okay? We didn't get very far today. we're kind of talking about the last sentence of the first paragraph. Talking a little bit about bodhicitta here. To benefit all sentient beings, I will become Vajrasattva and lead all sentient beings to Vajrasattva's supreme state. So let me link that sentence with what we've been talking about. When we really see the disadvantages of the self-centered thought and how it makes us miserable, and we start working against it because we see that it's the problem in our life, and we start looking to other sentient beings and cherishing them and wanting them to be happy. Okay, so we're generating love and compassion for other living beings. If we think is bringing them other is remember the world viewpoint we talked about yesterday of multiple lifetimes and everything. Is just bringing other sentient beings the happiness of this lifetime. Is that sufficient? It's not, is it? Because they're not always going to be in this lifetime. Yeah. So they have to learn how to create the causes for happiness. They have to learn how to abandon the causes of misery and how to purify any negativities that they've created so far. So they have to learn the path to enlightenment, you know, how to be free of all of the miseries of cyclic existence. So that's the ultimate happiness that we want them to have. And the freedom from cyclic existence is the ultimate freedom that we want them to have. Now, how are we going to bring that about for other sentient beings? Yeah. If we're stuck here in the middle of cyclic existence, you know, getting born and reborn due to our own ignorance and afflictions and karma, how are we going to be of the utmost benefit to others and show them how to be liberated from cyclic existence? It's going to be like the blind leading the blind, isn't it? Yeah. So if we, when we really care about others and we want for the best for them long term, and when we really care about ourselves and want the best for ourselves long term, then we're going to set as our goal a full Buddhahood, you know, the complete perfection of our mind, the complete purification of our mind. And that will be our goal. Okay? That is the what we call bodhicitta. Yeah. The altruistic intention, the awakened heart or awakening heart, the awakening motivation. Yeah. So that's what this last sentence is talking about. When we say to benefit all sentient beings, it means to benefit them in the long term, not just this lifetime, but so that they can have the bliss of being free of cyclic existence, so that they can have the joy of actually attaining full Buddhahood and, you know, fulfilling all of their own potential and having ultimate satisfaction and fulfillment. In order to do that, then I need to become Vajrasattva. Yeah. I need to stop being little old me, who's so incompetent, poor quality me, who can't do anything right, who nobody loves. I need, because how am I going to benefit anybody if I have that view and that motivation? Yeah. So what I need to do instead is to transform my body-mind into Vajrasattva's body and mind. I need to become Vajrasattva. Yeah. I need to have the omniscient mind and the mind of full love and compassion that extends to everybody equally, including myself. Yeah. I need to be able to know what people's dispositions or tendencies are. I need to be able to endure however they treat me. Yeah. I need to become a Buddha if I'm really going to be of the ultimate benefit. I need to become Vajrasattva. Okay? So we set that as our long-term goal. I'm going to become the Buddha. I'm going to become Vajrasattva, Tara, Chenrezi. You know, it all means the same thing. And why am I doing that? For the benefit of all sentient beings, others and myself. So this is the long-term purpose, becomes the long-term purpose of everything we do. So even the smallest action in our life, if done with this long-term motivation, becomes very, very meaningful. Because the smallest action, you know, passing the ketchup, becomes a spiritual action. Because in your mind, you're thinking, you know, may I do this to become Vajrasattva for the benefit of all sentient beings? I'm giving them ketchup now because they asked for it. May I be able to give them the whole path to enlightenment? Yeah. So the way you're thinking transforms even small things that you do. Yeah. So this is linking to what I said at the very beginning. Yeah. We may do a lot of things with the self-centered motivation of our own happiness. It leaves us feeling very unfulfilled. And it even will make our Dharma practice become just another feel-good thing. But the more that we cultivate the bodhicitta motivation, not only will our spiritual practice be devoted towards something really worthwhile and meaningful, but we can do just the ordinary things in our life with that motivation, and then they become highly meaningful. Because we're bringing the welfare of all sentient beings into a small action that we're doing. You getting what I'm saying? Yeah? So you can go to work with the motivation of, oh, I've got to go to work because I've got to have some money, because otherwise I'm going to live on the street and I'm terrified of living on the street. So we have, you know, paranoid mind, yeah, keeping you in a job that you can't stand out of fear. And we call that having a life. Okay? So you can go to work with that kind of motivation and that kind of feeling, and you live your life like that. Or you can think, I'm going to work, you know, to contribute to the welfare of whatever clients or customers my company is serving, you know, or my work is serving. And through what I'm doing, may others experience happiness and joy. And I'm making some kind of link with them now on the level of whatever kind of work I'm doing. But through having this link with them in the future, due to my Dharma practice, maybe I'd actually be able to teach them the Dharma and lead them on the path to enlightenment. Yeah? Then you go to work. Then all the people that you work with all day, yeah, these are all the sentient beings that I want to lead to enlightenment, and I want to bring, you know, even a little bit of joy and, you know, goodness into their lives right now. So then it becomes so much easier to get along with the people that you work with in your office. Yeah? And then when you come home at night, instead of just feeling like, oh, I'm so glad that's over, I'm exhausted, I just want to eat something, sit in front of the TV, or sit in front of the computer, or exercise my thumbs. Yeah. That's the meaning of our life. You know? So instead of feeling like that when you come home from work, you think, you know, I gave what I was able to give with a good motivation. I feel satisfied by that. I spread some joy and some goodness to my colleagues, to the clients, to the customers. You know, in the future, may I be able to lead them on the Dharma path. Yeah. I have, you know, I did this with the bodhicitta motivation. I'm going to dedicate all the merit I created. And so I feel good about what I did today. Yeah. Then you come home. Yeah. You go and take a walk and get some exercise. Yeah. You sit down and you actually look at your family members in the eye instead of texting them, because they're watching, they're at a computer in another room because the families can't even all sit in the same room. You know, you actually look at your kids and say, how was your day? What did you learn about life today? What interesting experience did you have today? And you listen to what your kids say. Fascinating. Yeah? So your whole life gets transformed just by changing your motivation, just by changing how you look at things. So our mind is very, very powerful. And the more we're able to change the mind, the more we create goodness for ourselves and others. OK, Okay, let's just sit for 5 minutes then and think about what we talked about. Okay? Think about what you heard in terms of your own life. And then let's dedicate. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Vajrasattva, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.